You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is San Bernardino, California City Attorney James F. Jim Penman. Jim, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Is it okay if I refer to you as Jim?
Absolutely.
Okay, thanks, Jim. Jim, I saw an article online a little bit ago. City attorney tells San Bernardino residents to lock their doors, load their guns because of police downsizing, and there were a couple other articles about this matter. I want to get into that in great detail in a minute, but before we do, for the benefit of the listeners, can you give them a little bit of background about who you are and what you do for the city?
Well, I'm city attorney for the city of San Bernardino. I've held this position for 25 years. It's an elected position. I run every 4 years. I may very well be in my last term now, both because of longevity and political events. One never knows. But sadly, our city is going through a very difficult time. We are in bankruptcy right now. We've had a 50% increase in murders in the city over last year. Because of our financial situation, we've had to reduce the size of our police department. The highest level we've been at was 350 officers. We're down about 80 officers from that now. And we've had some very troubling incidents of crime, many involving our senior citizens. And the incident you refer to, I was speaking to about 150 citizens at a neighborhood meeting, and many of those were seniors and many of them were veterans. I recognized most people in the audience, having lived here all my life. And after they heard from the police chief and I as to the problems we are facing, the fact that we have a legislative bill, AB 109, that's requiring the state to drastically reduce the prison population, and they're releasing people who are supposedly nonviolent offenders, although that may mean that a home invasion robbery was plea bargained down to a burglary. We have a large number of people in our community who have criminal records, a number of parolees, and we have a lot of people here who should still be in prison. And the murder of an elderly lady a few weeks ago has particularly incensed the community. In any event, we can sense the audience growing more and more frustrated as to the problems we're facing, the fact that many people in the community believe that the large number of homeless parolees in the city might be a factor in some of the crimes. And the chief was explaining that because the county jail is filled with people who were released from state prison, the sheriff cannot lock up homeless parolees just because they're camping on public property or violating some other misdemeanor law. And we were both being asked what people can do, and I told them that when I'm asked that, I told people, when you return home, to lock your doors and load your guns. And in other remarks, I've commented that, in my opinion, if you have children at home, you should not have a loaded firearm in your house, regardless whether the child is a toddler on up to teenagers. Children are attracted to firearms, and I think it's a very dangerous thing to have a loaded firearm in your home if you have children. And I also told the people that if they've had no training in use of firearms, if they're not comfortable around firearms, they should not have one in their home. And I certainly was not advocating that people go out and buy them. Interestingly, a few weeks before, we had heard rumors that some people were getting ready to take some vigilante action against some of the homeless camps along the freeways in the city. And our freeway system has a great deal of heavy foliage along the sides where these people camp out. And at a televised city council meeting, I warned them that vigilante action would not be tolerated in the city, and that if anyone did threaten or attack anyone, especially with a firearm, that they would be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. The local media ignored that comment and that warning, but they were quick to jump on the "when you go home, lock your doors and load your guns" comment, and portrayed that as an actual call on my part for vigilantism. It's an interesting dynamic. The city's in a very serious situation right now, and it's not that people are living in terror here. I think most people feel relatively safe in their homes, and our police department is excellent. I think it's one of the best in the nation. It's certainly, I think, probably the best in the state of California, and they can respond pretty much anywhere in the city on a high-priority call and get there within 3 to 6 minutes. But the elderly lady who was murdered in her home, which was right across the street from the freeway, she never had a chance to get to her telephone. And sadly, we've had other crimes where people have been surprised in their homes. That's pretty much the context in which those comments were made.
You actually weren't born there in San Bernardino because your mom said she's not going to give birth to a damn Yankee, and she flew back to Mississippi. Is that true?
That's true. My father's family came to California during the Great Depression, and my parents met when my dad was stationed in Jackson, Mississippi during the Second World War before he went overseas. And after they were married, they moved here, and my mother did make that statement to my father's sister, and so he flew back to Mississippi, and my dad got his vacation and was there also when I was born, and then he came back, and then I was about a month old. After being baptized in the local Lutheran church, which had been the family religion for centuries, we flew back to San Bernardino. My brothers and sisters, there are 5 of us, they say the rest of us are damn Yankees.
But basically, you are a native of San Bernardino.
To the extent that you can be one without actually being born here, that's probably true. Kindergarten through high school and California State University at San Bernardino, then Western State University College of Law in Fullerton, with my Army service in the middle somewhere there. With those exceptions, I've been here in San Bernardino just about all my life.
And I was going to ask what branch you're in because you didn't say it here on the biography.
The Army. Proud to have been in the United States Army.
Thank you for serving. Were you in Vietnam?
No, I was fortunate. I was stateside. I spent a total of 6 years in the Army Reserve. In fact, the mayor of our city and I were in the same reserve unit. He's a member of Mayor Bloomberg's Mayors Against Guns Committee. Sometimes we have an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, it's interesting. The mayor of New York is getting involved in gun control across the entire country.
He is. According to the paper, he put about $3 million into a campaign against one of our longtime congressmen, Joe Baca, who was one of the last Democrats to be endorsed by the NRA and defeated him in this election in November.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem right. But you, obviously, spending your whole life there, you have seen San Bernardino change dramatically, I guess, would be an understatement, right?
It would be. San Bernardino is a county seat. San Bernardino County is the largest county geographically in the continental United States. You could put three of our New England states into San Bernardino County and still have hundreds of miles left over. We go all the way to the Colorado River, and we have mountains and desert here. But when I grew up in San Bernardino, it was a wonderful place to grow up. It was a great community, and still is. And as kids, we cruised East Street, which was the main drag. Kids don't do that here anymore because we had some shootings along our cruise route a few years ago. Well, quite a few years ago now. So that went away. But the town has just experienced some pretty tough times. And for years, we were the dumping ground for parolees from Los Angeles County. In 2000, the director of the State Department of Corrections visited us and admitted that they had been ignoring their own rules in releasing prisoners who belonged in Los Angeles County to the San Bernardino County, mostly to the city of San Bernardino, which is the largest city in the county. So we have an artificially inflated criminal population here. And the people have been here long enough who were transferred here and their children are here that when they do commit a crime, they are now rightfully returned to the city of San Bernardino. It's become a tough, well, it was always a tough town. Actually, Wyatt Earp grew up here as a young man. We were a stage center, and he rode shotgun and did a few things like that, drove wagon teams before he became famous.
Mm-hmm.
One of his brothers, who was killed in, you know, the infamous Western Fights, is buried in a cemetery in the adjacent city of Colton.
I wasn't aware of that. That's pretty cool. Also, some pretty cool stuff, and I wasn't aware of this either. San Bernardino is where the first McDonald's was.
A lot of interesting. The first McDonald's, two or three fast food chains started here, Taco Tia. It's an interesting town. We're about 60 miles southeast of Los Angeles. We have a population of about 203,000, not counting people who are undocumented who are here, which undoubtedly pushes our population up much higher. We don't really know for sure how many.
Mm. Reading here from Wikipedia, it says that San Bernardino is the 17th largest city in California, the 99th largest in the United States, and that in July 2012 became the largest city ever to file Chapter 9 bankruptcy, and you alluded to that before, and that says the case was filed on August 1st. And San Bernardino is the poorest city of its population size in California, and the second poorest in the U.S. next to Detroit, Michigan. I was unaware of that. How about you, Jim?
Sadly, I'm aware of those statistics, and of course, it's not something that we're particularly pleased about here. It's a complete reversal from a middle-class, blue-collar town that San Bernardino was for years. This was a favorite getaway location for Hollywood celebrities. Tennessee Ernie Ford had his start here on radio, and Carol Lombard had a home in neighboring Redlands. And in the days when people took more than one day to get from L.A. to Palm Springs, a lot of notable people from Hollywood would spend the night here, and some even had homes here. And we have a beautiful hotel at the foot of our mountains, Arrowhead Springs Hotel, which is now owned by Campus Crusade for Christ. But it was quite an active social center for Hollywood celebrities in the 20s and 30s. But the town has changed. We've had a lot of middle-class flight from the city. The demographics have changed considerably in San Bernardino. I hope it's not a portent of things to come for other cities around the nation. I know that we're not the only one that has had to contemplate bankruptcy. We're one of the few that have had to go into it. I hope we're not followed by others, but we keep hearing that many other cities are looking at that possibility.
Mm. In 1970, non-Hispanic white, I guess that would just mean white, were about 66% of the population, and in 2010, they are now 19%. Does that seem accurate?
I think that's fairly accurate. In 1976, San Bernardino was named an All-America city, which is quite a distinction, and it has changed. But when I was a boy growing up here, it was pretty much of a segregated town. Most African-American and Hispanic citizens lived on the west side of first the railroad tracks, and they put a freeway right along the railroad tracks with no exits on the west side. And so what was called then our minority community was pretty much isolated. Today, it's a very fully integrated city. It's not segregated at all, but it definitely was. I spent my early years here on the west side and attended schools that were very much integrated, but schools on the east side of the freeway where the majority of the people live were very segregated. And when I went to junior high school, I went to a school that only had one or two Latino students, no African-American students. And the high school I went to, Pacific High School, we had, I think, the largest graduating class in the nation that year, 1,300, 1,400, and school was well over 3,000 or 4,000. African kids, and we probably had less than 100 African American kids. That changed as well, and that, I think, is a good thing. It's an interesting dynamic, but I think it also, because so much of our crime and so many of the people in our prisons continue to be African American and Latino, I think it's a warning of what can happen to a city that doesn't address problems of poverty, educational issues, and opportunities for employment, especially amongst the non-majority population. And other cities should really give a lot of thought to that as to about what's happened to San Bernardino, that it doesn't happen in their own communities. And I'm not speaking of integration, which I think all of us are comfortable with. I'm speaking of the crime that so permeates many of the, what we call, minority community members.
So right now, it looked like San Bernardino is about 20% white and 60% Hispanic and about 15% African American and then Asian and the rest. Does that seem about right?
You know, give or take 5 or 6 percentage points mm-hmm. in either direction. It depends on what survey you're looking at or who does the survey.
That's right. There's 3 kinds of lies. Lies, damned lies, and statistics.
There you go.
Before you mentioned L.A. County bringing the prisoners over to your city, besides that factor, what are the culprits here in the increased crime rate?
The biggest problem we faced was for many years, San Bernardino had 3 main employers. The Santa Fe repair yards were here. Kaiser Steel was here in Fontana, which is a neighboring city. And Norton Air Force Base was here in the city of San Bernardino. And together, those 3 entities provided the bulk of our income base with the city. And because there were different levels of employees and different levels of pay, we had a pretty well community as far as economics goes for many, many years. Certainly, the city goes back to the early 1800s, up through the 19th century, through the 60s, 70s, and even 80s. But when the Air Force Base closed, close to the mid-1990s, Santa Fe transferred its repair shops at Topeka, Kansas. Kaiser Steel closed down. We began to see an exit from the city of middle-class families looking for work elsewhere. A lot of homes became vacant. A lot of those were purchased by out-of-town landlords, many of them actually immigrants from foreign countries. And I don't mean Mexico or South America, by the way. And when they purchased these homes, they purchased them as investment properties, and they turned them into rentals. And our renter population became very high. It's right around 50%, just a little bit below, something a little bit above 50%. And our population that's on some type of assistance is also very high. It's just below 50%. Although I question those statistics sometimes, because I think some of those studies include people receiving Social Security, which I don't see as public assistance, and the people who get that paid into it. But in any event, San Bernardino has certainly been a blueprint for what not to do as far as cities, what not to let happen in your community. Not that we had anything to do with closing Norton Air Force Base or Kaiser Steel or the decision to relocate the Santa Fe repair yards. It was just happenstance for us, but it was a real tragedy for us as well.
This elderly woman, you said, who lived near the freeway, do you know much about her? What was her age? What was her race?
She was white. She was in her mid-70s. It's a nice home just below the Arrowhead Country Club, and the freeway runs through the middle of the town and is right across the street from where she lived. And we've had a number of incidences in the last year in that particular area. It's one of the more affluent areas of town, and as such, it's become more and more of a target for burglaries and property crimes. And we've had some surprising crimes of violence that have occurred in the area as well. But we have some pretty dangerous people who should be in prison but are no longer in prison because of this early release program. The lady had been employed by the city schools. She was not a teacher. She was support staff, member of the local Presbyterian church, well-liked by her neighbors and by those who knew her. My wife is on the school board here in San Bernardino, and she knew who she was and said she was well-liked in the school system.
She was alone.
She was alone. I did not know her personally. I had seen her walking door to door and spoken to her, but I don't know too much about her background. There's not a lot I can say because that crime is still under investigation, and much of the information that we have is not being released to the public for very good reasons at this time, while we're still searching for the perpetrators.
That's what I was going to ask. You didn't catch the bad guy or bad guys.
Not yet, but our police department is very good at catching criminals, and I'm confident that whoever's responsible for this will be caught. But that has not happened yet.
That would be great. And I just wanted to make one last reference to one of these articles online. This was the follow-up to the first article. This one says, Jim Penman defends load your guns advice, which to me anyway, it kind of is common sense and it makes sense. I mean, you know that saying, when seconds count, the police are only minutes away. If you have a gun and you know how to handle it, why would you not load it to protect your family? I don't understand the rationale, but it seems that one of these fellows here, this councilman, Fred Jorrit, I think that's his name, when he heard you say that, he said that your comments were inappropriate. And he said, I think it's the wrong message to be sending to our citizenry.
Well, Mr. Shred and I are on different sides of the political fence. I think it's the right message to send. I think if we could make public a good deal of the information we have about recent crimes, we wouldn't need to make a statement like that. The statement that I made was not something I said without any forethought. I've been thinking about it for some time, a way to try to warn the public about the degree of problem that we're facing in this community without revealing any information from any of the investigations that have been going on. There's always a balance as public officials that we have to think about, because you don't want to cause panic. You don't want to cause unnecessary unnecessary alarm. And at the same time, if a situation arises in your community where the government is not able to protect its citizens to the level we wish to protect them, then I think it's incumbent upon officials in the government to give some type of warning to the public. It's very difficult, and I was aware when I made the statement that I would be criticized, and that's just the way it is. I was more disappointed that the press did not include the statements that I've made about not having loaded weapons in your home if you have children, and that people who have no training in the use of firearms should get training before they purchase one. Our Sheriff's Department has excellent programs. They have one called Lady Beware, where they instruct women in what to watch out for, how to avoid situations, how to get out of situations, and it includes hands-on training in the use of rifle shotguns and handguns. And I recommend anyone who has a concern to participate in that program. I think people who are not comfortable around guns should not have guns around. I'm not advocating that people who don't know what they're doing rush out and buy a firearm and load it, lock their doors and close the blinds and hide in their homes. Not at all, and I don't think it's that necessary. But we have had a number of home invasion robberies, and I think that those who are able to do so should take the necessary steps to protect themselves, and I think it's incumbent upon government to tell people when the time has come, and in my opinion, the time has come for that in San Bernardino. Many police officers have told me that. Many law enforcement officials have told me that. It puts our police chief in a tough situation. He doesn't want to say that he can't protect the people, and for the most part, people are protected in this town.
Right.
But it's obvious when you've had a 50% increase in murders in 1 year that something is out of kilter, and yeah. That's where we are in the city of San Bernardino. I respect those who criticize what I said because they're concerned about causing some type of panic, although the only panic I've seen so far seems to be in the mainline media that's reacting to the comments that I made, and certain people like the council member that you mentioned. I believe the majority of the city council agrees with the statements that I've made. Councilwoman Wendy McCamick, who is the council member for the ward where the meeting was held, in fact, she's the one who called the meeting. She and other council members have certainly been supportive, although they're being somewhat more circumspect in their comments, and that's fine because I don't think more than one of us needs to make it. But I think the city attorney, who's also the city prosecutor, is one of the appropriate people to make that comment. Our mayor would certainly not make it given his views on guns and gun control. So I have no apologies to make for having given that warning. In fact, I repeated it at the council meeting Monday and last night at another neighborhood association. I repeated the similar comments with the same warnings about not having loaded guns in homes with children, and people without training should not be around guns or have guns around themselves.
Well, I want to thank you for saying that, and I'm sure many listeners are thinking the same thing. Just finally, I just wanted to ask, and I'm glad you brought that up because I did want to touch on that about the increase in murder rate going up by 50%, so I guess 45 so far this year, and then last year, I guess, was 30 around there?
Something like that. We've had 46 homicides so far, and we've got one person in the hospital. Last I heard, he was in critical condition. Hopefully, he'll survive. I was in an officer-involved shooting Tuesday night because we get sued so often when our police officers have to use their weapons. An officer was chasing an armed robber who had a gun in his hand and raised it at the officer, and the officer shot him. And fortunately, he's expected to survive the wounds to his leg and hand. But it's a tough city. It's a tough city to police. And when the city's having trouble making payroll, and we've asked the sheriff for a proposal, how much it would cost the sheriff to come in if we disbanded our police department, which most of us do not want to do. But we have to look at that because we are in bankruptcy, and we have to be able to show the bankruptcy court and our creditors that we're not leaving any stone unturned. It's a tough town, and when you have people who aren't afraid to point a gun at a police officer, they're certainly not afraid to point a gun at an unarmed person.
No, and I was going to ask the number of people murdered this year. Do they mostly come from that population that we discussed earlier? It's not people like that 70-year-old woman. That's an anomaly, right?
That is, and thank goodness for that. Most of the people who are victims of homicide in the city are involved in gang or drug activity, as in most cities. We haven't had 46 innocent citizens or bystanders gunned down. That's not been the situation. But one is too many, and we certainly had more than one where innocent people have been victims of homicides recently, and that's unacceptable.
I'm sure there's probably a certain number of listeners who are saying, well, that's fine. As long as that happens, let them kill each other as long as they don't hurt the innocent people.
I'm sure a lot of people in San Bernardino feel that way as well. Some of them have the attitude, well, if you left bad guys on the street, if they were to limit themselves to only hurting other people involved in gangs and drugs, perhaps it'd be another matter. But that's not the case here right now. And we need to be taking precautions, and our citizens need to be taking precautions because, as I said, we have a great police department, and if you call them with a high-priority call, such as someone breaking into your home, they'll get there quickly. But we've had some incidents where people have not been able to get to the phone to make that call.
Yeah, it looks like San Bernardino could use another Wyatt Earp. There are a couple of Wyatt Earps, right?
Well, you know, our police department celebrated its 100th anniversary in 2010, and we had a photograph of the police department at that time, and they were pretty tough-looking characters, and I made the comment that those guys could probably clean up this town in a couple of months, but then they'd probably all be under federal indictment afterward. It's a different world, but sadly, San Bernardino citizens today are living in an Old West atmosphere, and in the Old West, I think you were probably safe most of the time, but the law could be a long ways away, and you had to be able to take care of yourself until the law got there.
City of San Bernardino, California, City Attorney James F. Jim Penman. I want to thank you so much for the time you spent explaining all this to listeners. Thank you for doing what you do out there. I know it can't be easy, and looking forward to talking to you again in the future, Jim.
Thank you. I look forward to it.